Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the To The T podcast. This is To The T, episode 3. It rhymes, therefore you know it's great. My name is Jordan Michael Colson, your humble host, joined by two experts, two major players in the field, John Brown, Bryce Voice, and as always, here to regale us with their industry knowledge. And we're going to try to have a little fun today, guys. First and foremost, welcome back to the program. How are we feeling today, gentlemen?
I feel great about the content we have today. There's so much to talk about. Doing this podcast once a month is perfect. So much going on in the professional world of golf. We're going to talk some business, acquiring new golf courses, and how you put creative deals together. Just a lot of excitement around the game of golf, Jordan. I love it.
And Bryce, I'm contractually obligated to ask, how are you feeling?
I'm feeling great, Jordan. I woke up today, central Pennsylvania. The sun is shining. It's going to be north of 60 degrees today.
Yeah, 61.
I'm seeing tee times coming in kind of all over the country. Things are starting to sell, starting to pop. I think the season's going to be on us here pretty quick, and that's exciting.
Boys, some things are happening on the more fun side, more entertainment value in the golf industry as well. Netflix has brought out Full Swing Season 2. I know coming off of Season 1, we were very excited, but we did a recap of it, and we thought it was sort of a lateral move for golf. I'm one episode in. I don't know how far you guys ventured into the program. However, I do know that I was thoroughly entertained. I'm loving the new season. I'm loving the narratives. There's so many storylines at play here. I know our assignment, we actually got paid, Bryce, yesterday to watch episode 1 for this recap. So, John, starting with you, what do we think of episode 1? What do we think of where season 2 is headed? And how excited are you for the new offering?
Well, season 2 launched yesterday. I watched the first 2 of 8 episodes. I just think the access to the players is unprecedented. I mean, both in golf and just in sports in general. I mean, you can't get Rory being more honest than he's being. And, I mean, I love it. I love how they're following the narratives, like you said, Jordan. I think the live dynamic adds just such an interesting layer into the overall show. I know season 1 kind of got so-so ratings. I think it seems like season 2 is going to come out stronger. But for someone who's a golf nut, I mean, it's a great show. I can't wait to watch the other 6. I just wish there was, 40 episodes.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with John. The access to the players, like, and that at first episode to see Rory being so candid, he's obviously extremely passionate about what he's doing. He's passionate about the health of the game. So to see behind the scenes while all that's going on is just really cool. Obviously, we get to hear what he says in press conferences, but and not only that, but to also see how competitive he is when Brooks Koepka won the PGA and how that rubbed him. He mentioned that. Something along the lines of he's upset that a player of his era has more major championships than he does. I mean, that's gold.
Actually acknowledging that fact, I mean, most won't. And good recap from 2023 of how impactful the LIV players were in the majors. I mean, it's so impactful. I mean, in the Masters, you had Brooks and Phil finishing tied for second. Might be the last time Phil played well. But that was the Masters last year, right?
Brooks should have won. Yeah. And John Rahm did win, who's obviously now on LIV.
Who's on LIV. And then you got the PGA Brooks wins, right?
Yep.
They show the U.S. Open then. Cam Smith finished in the top 5 of the U.S. Open. I mean, there's just LIV players throughout the majors. So I think any idea that you're playing less golf and you're only playing 3 competitive rounds and it's going to erode your ability to compete in majors, that doesn't look like that narrative is translating whatsoever.
Yeah, I agree. And you can, just the interaction with the players on Full Swing, you can see that their goal at the top level is to win majors, whether it's Brooks Koepka on LIV or it's Rory McIlroy or John Rahm. Like, that is their mark. That's their benchmark. It's not how many tournaments they win, but how many majors they win. And those LIV players, I think, are going to continue to compete well in the major championships.
Totally shocked how much the players were in the dark about the merger conversation with LIV. I mean, I thought publicly that was going to be their stance, but that's actually what happened.
I know. Incredible to see that. And it seems it's the same on the LIV side. Like, they're not getting any information either. So it's, there were, I guess Matt Fitzpatrick said maybe 4 people on planet Earth that knew what was going on.
Yeah.
And for something of that magnitude to not have any leaks or to not even notify, a player like Rory McIlroy is pretty unbelievable.
And that was June of 2023. And obviously, since then, we've learned a lot more about this. Oh, wait, no, we haven't. We haven't learned a lot about this merger at all, have we?
We have not. No, I guess yesterday they released news about a new PGA Tour 13 person board moving forward. But yeah, we don't know anything.
I wonder if Tiger knew. Do you think they let Tiger know before that announcement came out? Was he in that room, you think?
No way to know for sure, but I think the answer is no.
Which is incredible.
It is incredible.
Players tour, none of the players know.
Yep.
Seemingly unlimited access, but you're not really there. You're not up close and personal, although you feel pretty immersed in the world that Netflix has created. I think the closest encounter I had with a golfer ever, I thought Cam Smith gave me an oil change at Jiffy Lube once. Turns out it wasn't him. But I was pretty confident that it was. John, you gave us the privilege of attending the PGA Championship this past year in upstate New York, a beautiful venue. We had the final day. We had the Michael Block hole-in-one. We had a lavish suite with all the trimmings and all the cuisine and the smorgasbord of food. How cool was it to see an event that you attended yourself with some work colleagues and some friends? And Bryce, what did you guys think of whenever you guys saw something that you had attended and been a part of on film in such a high quality?
I mean, I thought being on the grounds at Oak Hill, the place was unbelievable. I mean, just championship through and through, incredible venue for a major, I thought. Very strange whenever the tournament was over, we actually walked out to our car and we were able to walk like across the greens that they were putting on. So we're watching them putt in the final round on full swing on greens we walked on, right? Which was pretty neat. But I go back to the fact that, I mean, Brooks is a machine. I mean, the guy, you know, probably looked as lost as anybody on season one. And yet he comes out, almost wins the Masters, and then wins the PGA on that venue to get to five. Just an incredible player. Steps up to the plate. And it's pretty evident Rory McIlroy respects the hell out of Brooks.
Yeah, I definitely think that, you know, that's true. They seem to be, you know, if not friends, acquaintances. And they seem to kind of push one another, it seems. And they push one another, and that's kind of cool. You know, I don't know that Phil and Tiger had a great relationship, you know, back in the day, but I think it was similar in that those two kind of made one another better, and they kind of, you know, Tiger looked at Phil as he was upset anytime he lost to Phil, mm-hmm. and Phil probably the same with Tiger, where I'm sure Tiger pushed Phil to be a lot better too.
Well, we don't know. Maybe. You know, Phil's a unique bird, isn't he?
Yeah, speaking of Oak Hill, I saw the best chip shot I've ever seen in my life, and that was actually hit by Phil.
Oh, yeah.
The par three we were sitting on, he was, I would have been putting the ball, I guess. I don't know what I would have done, but
you'd have made it five.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. He's got a tight lie kind of below his feet, you know, just a Phil special. I couldn't believe he even tried it, honestly, off the lie that he had, but it was just the most impressive chip I've ever seen in my life.
Really neat to see the venue and the tournament being there and then seeing it recapped on full swing. It was cool.
So what are our expectations moving forward for the rest of the season? Of course, the season has already played out. It's in the can. It's been edited. It's up on Netflix right now. We could watch it if we wanted to blow off the rest of the day. I'm not making a suggestion, but John, if you want to let us off a little early. We kind of know what happened, but we don't know the intricacies and we don't know the full details. So do we have any expectations for season two? And ultimately, do we think that this will be a better way to promote the game of golf at a mainstream level than season one? Loaded question there.
It's going to be great, right? First of all, Hackgate with Patrick Cantlay, right? Yeah. But then, you know, the tiff with Rory on the 18th green and him kind of exploding. And I wonder what kind of access we're going to get there.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's going to be awesome. I hope it's similar to the access we got in episode one with Rory. I've kind of sneaked ahead and I've seen the first three episodes. And honestly, the third episode was probably my favorite. And it was covering Joel Damon and Wyndham Clark when Wyndham won the U.S. Open. And it just the Joel Damon, he's really struggling. And there's some pretty intense, real moments with his caddy that they capture. And it's raw and it's just really cool to see. And it's, you know, a little bit different than watching, obviously, Rory and Brooks. I think you kind of get a look into maybe the core of the PGA Tour player and what their struggles look like and what their challenges look like. So I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
So ultimately, do we think season two is even bigger, better for the game of golf as far as growing the game from a mainstream perspective? Do we think another lateral move or is it a wait and see until you can kind of digest the whole season?
I don't think this one's a lateral move. I think this one's a move forward and up. It'll garner interest, just the first two episodes. It's really intimate with the players and their wives talking about the game. And I think they've learned a little bit from season one and I think it's headed in a great direction.
There hasn't been a show like this that's given us an inside look at the players and challenges and their lives or families. And I think it's going to be great for the game.
Yep.
Liv can't seem to fully break through. Now, I know it's still in its embryonic phases, right? It's an infant, not even an infant compared to the PGA. But people love drama. They love storylines. And yet I think we're all in agreement that the PGA is still the titan in the industry as far as a golf league. But with all the names that are transitioning, with all the money being thrown around, the constant storylines at play, we haven't seen much of an uptick in the ratings, but perhaps it's an old antiquated way to measure it. We're seeing more YouTube views, more social media engagement. Do we see the Liv coming out for the better after season two is finished, whether there's a merger or not?
I think the Liv merging is probably the best case scenario for the Liv. What I've taken, I mean, I like it. I'll turn it on and watch it because some of the best players in the world are on that tour. There's two things I don't like. I don't like when there's an event in Saudi Arabia that happens 6 to 12 hours before the normal viewing time in America. That's tough. And I don't like the shotgun format. I think you lose the drama building component of, you know, the lowest players teeing off last, right? I think you lose a little bit of that. And with the team component of Liv, I feel like if they moved off of the shotgun format and they had the leaders tee off last, you could build both the team drama and the individual player drama. Those are two components that I'd look at from my perspective.
Yeah, I think that's right. You know, for me, I like it. I like the team format. I do watch it. I also watch the PGA Tour, so I'm just kind of a golf fan all around. I agree with John in that the time zones make it tough if they're playing in Saudi Arabia or Australia. Obviously, it's really hard to watch those events, or if you are watching it, you're watching it on delay, which isn't great. But you know, I think Liv's goal is really to bring attraction to the sport globally and not just the United States. And, you know, the PGA Tour obviously is kind of based in the United States and seems to be a little bit more U.S.-based. I think that there's room for both in the game, whether there's a merger or there isn't a merger. And I think that Liv's goal is really centered around that kind of global feel. And we'll see how it plays out. But I think, you know, the production is, I think, has a long way to go. I think they can do a lot to make it more entertaining, to do better job of storytelling, etc. But if you look at where they started and where they are, there has been a lot of advancement and improvement. So we'll see where it goes.
Kind of interesting. I took a look at the last six winners of the Liv events and the PGA Tour events. So PGA Tour, you got Austin Eckroat, Jake Knapp, Nick Taylor, Wyndham Clark, Matteo Pavone, right? And Nick Dunlap. Probably the next phase of golfers in our game, potentially, right? Where you look at the Liv, you got Dustin Johnson, Joaquin Niemann, Carlos Ortiz, Brooks Koepka, Bryson DeChambeau, Cameron Smith. As far as star power, there's no question that Liv grouping is much stronger. But the PGA Tour grouping is the future. So it's kind of interesting how it is. And it's one of the major components of the world ranking discussion that Liv's fighting against, which is, you know, there's a set group of players that play in all your events. There's not a inroad for players that are up and coming to get into the Liv events, where obviously the PGA Tour there is, right? And I think that's a huge difference between the two tours, without a doubt.
Yeah, certainly is. I think that'll change in time. It'll be interesting to see how Liv adjusts for that, kind of what happens with the Asian Tour and some of the other world tours that could possibly be inroads into Liv.
Yep.
Joaquin Niemann is never shy about making his presence felt and making his voice heard. He had some interesting things to say after he topped Sergio Garcia at the event in Mexico, and then more recently, he had more things to say after his win in Saudi Arabia. Did you guys see the comments that he had made after that match?
I saw him. I thought it was completely overblown on social media against Niemann. I mean, he made a tongue-in-cheek comment about being, you know, ranked the 100th player in the world when he obviously knows he's...
The exact quote is, as the reporter complimented him for two wins in the past three events, you're one of, if not the hottest player in the world right now. He said, how is that possible if I'm like 100 in the world?
You know, to me, and he said it with a smile, right? You know, to me, I think he has the right to say that.
100%. Yeah, I actually like giggled. I thought it was funny. People kind of, I think, maybe took it the wrong way a little bit. But he was totally being sarcastic, obviously. And I thought it was a funny little dig there.
It'd be very interesting if Neiman wins a major this year. Because it's one thing for Brooks, a live player, to win a major. He's been proven champion, right? But Neiman's an up-and-comer. Young guy, sure. One of the best players in the world. If he takes down a major.
Rounding it off with a little bit of live coverage here, do you guys think that sometimes the drama of the live is so overblown that it overshadows the level of golf that's being played, or even the names that are making the news? I mean, with comments like this being overblown on social media, there's always something going on in the headlines, and maybe that's part of the charm to try to get eyeballs on the product. But do you guys ever feel like the actual play takes a back seat to the storylines or the drama that goes on within the parameters of live?
No. I think the play is elite. It's on the level of the PGA Tour without a doubt. It's been proven at the majors. I think it's a representation of the best players in the world in a different format, but still playing incredible golf.
For sure. And it does seem that the LIV Tour has played some very challenging golf courses, especially kind of in their first season. The scores weren't, crazy 20 under par like, some of the tournaments are on the PGA Tour. So I think that led to a lot of people suggesting that their scores weren't as good, so the level of play had fallen off. But that's just not the case. And I talked a little bit about live storytelling, and I think they should do a better job of that, of educating the golfer on the difference in the golf courses and how tough the pins are, and a lot of the things that the PGA Tour does a really good job of. It'll be interesting to see if live does a better job of that moving forward.
Gentlemen, it is time to move on to the main course segment. And speaking of courses, Great Life Golf recently acquired the Country Club of Mount Dora in Mount Dora, Florida, and Sapona Golf and Swim Club in Lexington, North Carolina, into the company portfolio. Now, I got to personally be on site and witness the controlled madness that was the acquisition of the Country Club of Mount Dora. I've been to Sapona, beautiful property, great staff at both clubs, and we're very excited to have both of them under the Great Life Golf ownership portfolio. But John, Bryce, these deals don't just happen overnight. There's a myriad of things and a myriad of people and different personalities and agendas and money that gets exchanged to make these deals happen, and no two are quite alike. It's an arduous journey to get these deals from conception to completion, and at Great Life Golf, that is part of what we do. So, John, walk us through the process of what it was like to make these deals come to fruition, and if you would be so kind, provide us an insider's perspective of what it's like to be involved in any sort of deal of this magnitude in the golf industry.
The one aspect of deal making in golf we wanted to dig into a little bit today here, which is finding a golf course for sale that provides the right valuation number for the investors and is an asset that you can move forward is very challenging. And if you're just looking at clubs that are for sale online or through broker networks, you're going to miss out on some great opportunities. And I think that's where I want to dig in. So Bryce, obviously you came on board with us a few years ago. You've been through this process of seeing us look at new deals. Any thoughts on these two deals in particular, how they're unique?
Yeah, I think they're really exciting deals. Country Club of Mount Dora is in a market there that is a really upcoming market outside in Central Florida, kind of outside Orlando. When we're evaluating clubs, we're obviously looking at market demographics as part of our process. And the market demographics for Country Club of Mount Dora are very, very strong. And we're really excited about, the growth in that market in the next 5 to 10 years. Sapona Golf and Swim Club, we've managed it for the last year, so we've had an opportunity to kind of get our feet wet or dip our toes in, so to speak, and really understand the market and the golf course and the opportunities that lie within the golf course. I would say the two deals are vastly different, which kind of speak to the uniqueness of the two deals. But the one thing I think both deals have in common is just, Lexington is outside of Charlotte, North Carolina. Mount Dora is outside of Orlando, Florida. And Charlotte and Orlando are two markets that are just exploding with people and with golfers. So I'm really excited to see how that impacts both of those clubs moving forward.
Yes, and believe it or not, the way I learned about Sapona was the board president at the time had listened to one of our podcasts from about 3 years ago, two or three years ago, roughly. He called me out of the blue. He said, I liked some of the business aspects you're talking about. We began to talk. We went down, met with the board of directors. It was a private club run by the membership, and they were looking for an option to sell that to a golf operator. And we came in, we managed it for a year, and then we bought the club in January of 2024. So without Jordan and these podcasts, we may never have Sapona, right? But that deal in particular, Sapona, was a partnership with the membership. We actually bought the club from the membership, made a commitment to keep that golf course a golf course moving forward. And we made some capital CapEx infusion commitments as well. And we're really excited about the future there. And it's just a creative way that we were able to put that deal together. So that's Sapona. It all started with this podcast, Jordan.
Way to go, Jordan.
It's exciting. And getting to visit both properties was, they're all very different. They're all very beautiful and charming in their own right. I find it very intriguing that there's so many moving parts and so many different personalities and so many divisions. You got food and beverage, you got the agronomy, you got pretty much everything you can think of, the instructors, the staff. When the management company or the new ownership comes in, is there apprehension on their side? Are they saying, okay, these bigwigs are going to come in and disrupt everything? And, you know, I heard John on his podcast and he already likes to disrupt stuff. So he's definitely going to do it. Now we got wild man Bryce here. So you already know how that's going to go. But is there apprehension, or can we kind of thwart that once we get on site and people see that, you know, we are real people. We try to relate to them, get to know them, and implement what we do well, and it ultimately benefits everyone? Or is that just a juggling act in and of itself?
The interpersonal connection and, you know, on-site time is essential, right? So give the employees, the department directors, time to meet us, understand who we are at our core, and we get to do the same with them. And then obviously you build a business plan to make sure that the club can self-sustain. I talk a lot about club sustainability, meaning if a club doesn't throw off enough profits to reinvest capital into the footprint, right, and to provide some returns for the owners of the golf course, something bad will happen. Deferred maintenance, agronomy goes down, operational losses, the inability to hire employees at market rate. There's just so many bad things that happen if you can't build that self-sustaining operation. So you've got to get the club and the club's employees built into that culture that without self-sustainability, we all have less opportunity, right? I think we do a good job of doing that. So that would be the way I'd answer that question, Jordan.
Yeah, I would say, Jordan, you know, from my experience, it's perceived to be a challenge, but what you find is, as John said, if you you deliver the right message and spend that one-on-one time with the employees and really help them understand what we're all trying to achieve, the buy-in rate is just, it's incredible. Yeah, sure, every now and then we'll get one or two here or there that maybe don't buy in, but for the most part, I have been unbelievably impressed at the clubs that we've acquired and how willing the employees are to really kind of to buy into our process and our mindset, and they're excited about moving forward just as we are.
So you talked a little bit about the surrounding areas or the towns that you come into when you purchase a club or when you're interested in a property. Lexington, North Carolina, a lot of rich history in that area in the first place when it comes to golf. And we'll talk about that. But just because we were in Mount Dora more recently, again, very charming town. John, you and I tried to put our finger on it and describe it as we were driving around and I was taking pictures. And it was very hard to put your finger on. It's a little bit Victorian. It's a little bit like a fishing wharf village, but super charming and awesome and so many things to do. Really cool little breweries, microbreweries and restaurants. How much of a factor is the surrounding area when you go into a new property? Is it a major deciding factor or is it just icing on the cake?
It's becoming the primary factor. I think for Brown Golf, my original company, and then obviously now Great Life, it was less of a factor. It was more about the golf course, the layout, the infrastructure, the membership base. But the community around, and really the trade area around a golf course, is so essential to a golf course's potential for success. And, you know, it's less about the quality of the layout and much more about the quality of the golfers in the marketplace and recreationally what they want in that marketplace. And if we can find an opportunity where, you know, there's a higher percentage of golfers than the national average, which the national average is, you know, 8 to 8.5%, right, of folks play golf. If we can get into a market where there's 9 or 10% and there seems to be a little bit of a supply issue, but there's a club that maybe has been a little bit mismanaged, that's a perfect opportunity for us. And this deal is the essence of a creative deal. I mean, our attorney, Joe Radigan, is one of the most conservative folks I know. And about a year ago, he said, this deal has no chance of being put together because it was a three-party deal. And what we did here on Country Club of Mount Dora was the 800 homes and the HOA organized because the golf course owner was looking very strongly at developing the golf course, right? And so obviously the homeowners, the community didn't want that to happen, right? But there's a lot of dynamics at play. The owner currently is looking at valuations of what the land might be worth if it's not a golf course. The HOA is looking at the property like this is going to destroy our home values. And so what did the HOA do? They organized, they went out to golf operators, looked at multiple companies, ultimately partnered with us, and between the HOA and the golf course company, Great Life, we were able to make an offer valuation number to the current owner that they were willing to take, and we agreed to a covenant on the golf course to keep it a golf course in perpetuity. The homeowners got a golf course, safeguarded their real estate assets. We got a great golf property. They got a professional management company. It turned out to be a three-party win. There's a lot of dynamics at play there, but a creative deal, right? The way to get involved in an opportunity where we do what we do best, which is operate golf courses.
Yeah.
And the vast majority of people in Mount Dora, both the town and on the surrounding property, the neighborhood, the course, just seemed very happy to be there. It was a little slice of heaven, honestly. It was pretty cool to see. Very cohesive community, the vast majority of people. So from a business perspective, for any of our young listeners, young entrepreneurs, to both of you guys, because Bryce, I was very impressed with how much you kept your cool. And you know, you had a lot to do there, a lot to get done, limited time frame, some limited resources. I mean, just driving to Walmart twice in one day would be enough for me to call it quits. You were able to do that. Also get the point of sale up and running, get Golf Back integrated with their system, and a million other things that people don't realize. Well, from a business perspective, and when the pressure's on and there's a deal to be had, how do you guys maintain your cool in that setting? John, you had a couple fires that you had to put out. We don't need to get specific, but you're always so good at maintaining a level head. So Bryce first, how are you guys able to keep cool under pressure?
Well, I always joke that it's just tea times, right? And there's probably a reason that I'm not a doctor. So the reality is at the end of the day, it's golf, and it's something that we all love. And it's not the end of the world, even if things go as badly as they possibly could. Obviously, that's not the goal. But, you know, having that perspective, I think, is important. And I do say it jokingly, but I think there is an element of truth to it. Kind of have to put yourself in the employee's shoes, right? It's a lot of change just with having a different manager company or a different boss. Like, that's enough change for one person as it is. You introduce things that change their day-to-day, like a new point-of-sale system or new processes, and it's stressful for them. So understanding that they're going through that and helping them work through that, I think, is important. And you just have to kind of create the environment that, hey, we're all a team here and we're going to get through it, and you just do it.
Yeah, I mean, keeping my cool, I mean, that's what I'm great at, right, Bryce? I always, no, once in a while, I might lose my cool. I'm an A to B guy, right? There's a certain things that you need to do to ensure consistency and stability. And, you know, when you're doing that transition, whether it's a management deal, a lease, or an owned property, you got to have the right due diligence. You have to have the right operational plan. And then it's hard work to do it, right? I think that's the ultimate goal. We can hand anybody a list of what to do. The hard part is implementing it. So, but we're really excited about that opportunity and Sapona. And both of the clubs were the right valuation numbers, and they both had the right business makeups, meaning percentage of golf revenues compared to F&B revenues. And we felt good about the markets, and we felt good about our operational plan and our impact that we felt we could bring as a company. And that's really why they all worked together for to coming to completion.
What some people may not fully realize as well, while there's risk, of course, on the staff and the employee side and everything like that, and the HOA, there's a lot of risk financially, emotionally, everything on the ownership side as well. So I don't know that everybody fully realizes that, like, their money's on the line, but so is yours. So with that said, John, can one bad deal put a major detrimental dent in an entire portfolio?
Absolutely. And I think we've done a good job of understanding who we are and the deals we get involved in. A golf course asset that can't self-sustain is an absolute drain. An absolute drain. There's probably still 15% of the market of clubs out there that are that. And I don't mean just a drain on the owner. I mean a drain on the employees, a drain on the community. And you really need to guard against that. That's part of our business. Golf is a very cash intensive business when it comes to capital funding that's needed. And you got to find the right asset. So I think that's probably the number one thing that's evolved in our company over the last 5 years, is just ensuring that the deals we get involved with, we believe in.
We haven't talked a great deal about Lexington or Sapona yet, just because Country Club of Mount Dora is so fresh in our minds. But Sapona's getting some new stuff, and it's pretty cool, and they've already got some of their new stuff installed. John, can we talk quickly about new implementations at the Sapona Golf and Swim Club?
Well, it's just a strategy inside Great Life. You know, there's 15 million people playing off-course golf, right? An incredible funnel for greengrass golf, which has about 26 million people playing greengrass golf. The average age of greengrass golfers is 46, off-course 31, right? So if you're not creating an area where those 15 million people are attracted to your club, you're missing out on that potential opportunity in that funnel, right? So this goes to our Top Tracer range at Orange Lake, 12 bays down there. We're looking at doing multiple TrackMan installs, game entertainment areas, one with golden tee, one potentially with indoor putting green, TVs, sporting areas. And our goal is really to attract that funnel to our clubs to introduce them to greengrass golf. We've got business plans, we've got build outs, and now we've got ROI analysis, return on investment analysis. It's a big part of our future, and I'm excited about it. Bryce, you obviously know we're getting into the simulator and Top Tracer game.
Yep. Yeah, it's super exciting. You know, as a golfer, I love it. It's a lot of fun. Going through the winter here in Pennsylvania makes it a little bit easier to be able to just come to the office and hit a few balls here and there. But yeah, I think from a business perspective, it makes perfect sense. John kind of talked about the high level demand demographic numbers there. So from that perspective, I think it'll make a ton of sense, and we can pilot it at our own properties, which I think will be a great kind of a great beta test for understanding what those numbers look like and how sustainable it is long term.
Yeah, and I think the build-outs of the indoor simulator entertainment areas are in the $100,000 to $120,000 range, roughly right about in that mark, for simulator F&B build-out, furniture, TVs, maybe a golden tee, maybe indoor putting green. You're looking at that type of upfront cost. But then your costs are pretty much done, right? It's not like there's that much room if you can convert an area of your clubhouse for additional expenses you've built in and spend most of the money that you're going to need to in those spaces. So if you can charge $50 to $60 an hour and you can get 20, 30% utilization, that return on investment is inside 24 months without a doubt. And then, you know, if you can get it to 18 months, that would be great. Then month 19 on, it's all profit and you've created a fun, unique space in your clubhouse. And I really see this as a path forward for Great Life.
All right, it is time for Duff Said, the Would You Rather edition, making its triumphant return since episode one. And we are dedicating this one to one Anthony Kim, who made his less than triumphant return to the game. And he called it a rough week. He will play at the LIV event coming up in Hong Kong, and he still gets about as much media coverage as any LIV player. So, John, Bryce, would you rather be a mediocre LIV golfer who keeps his mouth shut, makes some money, and then just goes home, or a lower-tier LIV player with an electrifying personality who builds a valuable brand, gets media coverage, and garners attention?
Well, that really depends. I think I'd rather go with one than do what Anthony Kim did last week. What about you?
Yeah, I think I would choose one as well. I do expect AK to play better as time goes on. He was obviously going to be rusty no matter what. So it'll be interesting to see how he does, but I'd probably go with one.
I'm pulling for him. I really am. He was very dynamic and fun to watch, but he just didn't look the same to me. And you think about it, you know, you've got guys for the last 12 years have been working on their game that were at the same level he was 12 years ago, or maybe a tick behind, but they've been grinding it out and working, and he just didn't look like maybe he'd been working quite as hard as everybody else. So I think if he plays well, I would call it a surprise, but I'm pulling for him.
Yeah, same.
With Full Swing Season 2 now streaming on Netflix, it has been rumored that Joel Dahlman and his caddy Gino steal the show yet again. In a best out of three hole playoff, who would you rather have, Joel or Anthony Kim?
I'll take Joel. I'd also take Bryce right now over Anthony.
I would take Joel as well. I mean, as John said, Joel's been playing golf consistently over the last 12 years, and Anthony Kim's just getting back into it.
So. But you'd still take Anthony against me, of course, right?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Joel and his caddy Gino are now at an, well, Joel's caddy Gino is now at an estimated worth of over $1 million. I thought it'd be more than that, but that's according to celebritynetworth.com. He's on there, so that's kind of cool. With season two now released, I can only imagine that more fanfare will follow, which means more opportunities, possibly some endorsements. So moving forward, would you rather have Anthony Kim or Gino the caddy's earning potential for the rest of their professional career?
Well, do I get to make the interest rate on Anthony Kim's money from 12 years ago still? Does that count, Jordan?
Or it's however you interpret.
I think that's probably skewing the question, I would imagine. I'm going to take Anthony Kim because unless Gino hops on someone's bag who's really going to tear it up, Anthony Kim can get some sponsor dollars, right?
I think so. And he finished last on the Live Tour last week. He still probably made 80 grand or 90 grand for finishing last. So that's a lot of dough.
I feel like if Barstool Sports doesn't offer Joel and his caddy a podcast in the next 2 months, there's a major missed opportunity there. Just saying. Speaking out loud. All right, gentlemen, to round out the show, we always go to the lip out where usually I give you guys a platform to speak on. I'm going to guide you a little bit. I'm going to usurp your ability to take it in any direction you want because it is very timely, very important. We're going to talk a little bit about the President's Cup. And of course, Captain Mike Weir says, I've been told that they're not eligible. Speaking, of course, of the LIV players, they're not going to be eligible. And hopefully going forward, maybe in Chicago in 2026, they are. It's a shame. I mean, we want the best players. A few takeaways. Weir clearly wants LIV players eligible. And the PGA Tour obviously owns the President's Cup. Are they protecting their brand or are they missing the boat?
Well, I mean, maybe they are protecting their brand, but I mean, they got absolutely killed in the last President's Cup. And to think that they are not trying to put the best team forward that they possibly could, to me, is just like, what are we even doing here? But, you know, I guess they're worried about optics and their brand and all the other things that go into it. But as a golf fan, I'm like, come on, just put the best team up so we can watch an exciting President's Cup.
I want it to be competitive, and the last one wasn't at all, right? Yeah. And if this stance holds, which it's going to hold, you know, Cameron Smith, Joaquin Neiman, Oosthuizen, you know, maybe some of the other players on LIV if they get going hot, but, you know, aren't going to be on the team, you know. I mean, you could argue Smith and Neiman are the two best players out there, you know, that are eligible for that team based off, you know, where they're from, right? And to not have those two players is, to me, a huge detriment to the event.
I agree.
As businessmen, gentlemen, are they thinking, is there just too much red tape to get this done in time? Or are they thinking, we can't let them on our program? Someone might see a LIV player they're attracted to and then go watch them play instead of us. What is the mentality? What is the mindset? What is the thought process from a business perspective in your mind as to why this decision would be made?
I think they're just protecting the overall image. I mean, the deal's obviously not done. Maybe it speaks to the fact that it's not really close to getting done. I'm not sure. But yeah, I don't really know the answer to that other than they're afraid of upsetting the other players that didn't go to LIV by allowing them to play. I'm not sure.
I'm going to make a statement here, Jordan. I hope you don't mind. If you're going to have true team competitions, you need the best players. You got to figure that out, right? You can't have a team competition and then have some of the best players in the world, which all the players acknowledge are some of the best players in the world, outside of that team competition. Both the Ryder Cup and the President's Cup need to live players that have the quality and pedigree, which the other players respect, on those teams. It'll make the events better. And that's probably going to take some thought change.
I agree.
Boom, there. Pick up that mic and drop it. No, don't. We just bought that. Don't do that. Well, gentlemen, anything that you feel you need to go out on, I think that's a great way to wrap it up. Very excited about season two, of course, of Full Swing. Very excited about the newest acquisitions to Great Life Golf and the portfolio. Very excited to talk with you gentlemen about our industry and our game. And every time we have one of these episodes, I learn something new, and I really, really appreciate it. I think anybody can learn because there's so many moving parts. You get a little bit of almost every business is part of golf. So appreciate your insight, gentlemen, as always.
To the T, episode 3. Signing off. Thanks.
That's a wrap.